anecdotally, you know, we're recording this in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, and one of the things that really surprised me was already the impact we're seeing on the quarantine. So air pollution has been reduced. We've seen different animal life in places where they weren't before because of human interaction. And so that's actually been very fascinating to kind of to watch. And it's kind of a bright spot on a very dark time. So specifically, what can nut farmers, nut growers do to help the land, to help the cycle run more smoothly?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so a lot of people who are beginning nut growers, and we are beginning chestnut growers, we sell nursery trees as well. And so we talk with a lot of people who are putting in orchards. Maybe they're getting into chestnuts for the first time. And, you know, we have a lot of conversations with people about their orchard layout and their setup. And, you know, people ask about, like, well, can I grow multiple crops between the trees? And all these different ideas about ways to establish the orchards. And, you know, so I think that there's a lot of good ideas out there. And I've gotten some good ideas from friends of mine. You know, one thing is like maybe producing different types of crops between your nut trees when the nut trees are young. And then as they get bigger and shade out the other crops, well, then they'll start producing chestnuts. So it's kind of, you know, thinking of the orchard in a very successional manner where, yeah, I plant young chestnut trees, but I'm also growing, you know, in the short term, I'm growing, you know, pumpkins or asparagus or brambles or something, you know, between my chestnut trees. And then as the chestnuts come into production, then you switch over to a more chestnut-focused type of a thing. So I think that's an interesting thing that that beginning nut growers can do is, and it's not just about, again, you know, you need to make money to be able to do it, right? It's like most of us who farm, we need to make money so we can continue farming. That's what we love to do. So certainly, you know, think of your orchard system so that it will be economically feasible, but also think of it not just in terms of, you know, like, oh, I'm going to grow this crop and here's my, yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is don't think of it as a static plan. You know, forest ecosystems are successional. Things are constantly changing, maybe changing gradually, but things are constantly changing. Nothing is really stable or static for long periods of time. And so I think your farm business needs to be that way too. You need to think of it in a successional manner where, you know, whether it's your production systems or your, you know, economics, different products that you're presenting to people. It's not just, okay, here's my plan, here's my chestnut orchard, you know, here's my mowing regime. Yeah, you don't just put all the pieces in place and not think about it anymore. You know, you're constantly going to think about succession and opportunity and stewardship, you know. So that would be my advice to people who are starting out about, you know, what they can do with their land or how they can best use their land is really think about sort of food production over time and don't get lulled into thinking you can just set up some sort of system and not have to continuously improve it. And that goes for, you know, that goes for all the different things we're talking about. That goes for the economics of your orchard. That goes for the productivity and like the actual environmental stewardship as well.
Absolutely. I think that's a very important message to get across. And I think it's as again, commonsensical as it seems, I think it's easy to forget that because especially in nut orchards, it's such a long process that I think it can seem static. But the folks on the ground understand that things are always changing and things always need to be improved. So that's a very good message to get across. So often I feel like we preach to the choir on this podcast because we're talking about a lot of things that if you're already into growing nuts, you already know. And I try to capture a wide audience with this podcast. I try to reach out to people who might be interested in doing this in the future and people who, like you, are third generation. So I cast a wide net. So one of the questions that I think can appeal to everyone is, what can people do to pass this message on, to pass the message on of being a good land steward and why it's important to respect and to continue our you know, to protect our environment?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the fundamental thing that we all need to share, whether we're actually working on a farm, whether we have a hobby farm, or whether we're not even connected to the farming industry, but, you know, we like to eat. So that should be everybody. I think the theme is awareness, right? Awareness of the environment, of yourself, of your own body, and how you live and what you eat and what you buy affects yourself and then everything around you, you know. So that's something that we all need to work on all the time, is just awareness of our own habits and our own choices. And so I would say, you know, that makes us relevant to people who don't even grow nuts, right? The idea is that this type of production system is really healthy for the environment and for people. And so people who don't grow nut trees can support this type of nut growing industry by purchasing these types of products. You know, a lot of our customers, well, I'd say the majority of our customers, are people who live in cities, you know, people who aren't on the farm, who aren't close to the land, but they still really value chestnuts as a food source. And so, you know, they're supporting us. And so, you know, that's something that anybody can do, wherever you live. You know, you can buy products from nut growers, you know, from sustainable agricultural enterprises, and that, you know, will be better for you personally, and it will also support this type of landscape use, which is healthy for us all. That's the main thing that we can all do.
Absolutely. So to piggyback off on that, I kind of want to share my perspective. So I asked you to talk to me about this, not because it's just like I was bottom of the barrel. Who can I get to record this podcast? That's what wasn't definitely wasn't. It was because I know that sounds awful, right? But it's like people. But it was because after listening to you speak, it really made me think about my environment differently. Like when I go outside, my husband and I recently moved. So we moved last year, and we moved into a kind of a residential cul-de-sac-y kind of area. And I grew up on the farm. So I grew up being used to seeing different wildlife and seeing the different ecosystems. So now when I walk outside and I walk my dog, I like to look around and think about what kind of ecosystem is my neighborhood cultivating. And I do that by looking at the type of plants and trees that have been planted or already established, and the type of animals we see. And so your talk, it like really sparked something in me, because it's just like I kept constantly thinking that. I'm like, okay, well, what kind of animals do I see in my yard? And what kind of animals do I want to see in my yard? And kind of how can I better suit or build my environment to better suit that flora and fauna? And then I was, it, you know, from there it started, it made me think about, okay, well, what can I do as a person who owns a half acre of land to really change and impact my environment in a better way? And then I'm thinking like, well, what can my neighborhood do to change and impact my neighborhood in a positive way? And so it kind of like, I think I reference this book every single time I do a podcast recording, is If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. That's kind of how my thoughts work. And that's what your talk really inspired. So from, you know, you have been someone who has spent her entire life, you know, on the ground in a forest, but you've seen and you've lived in places where that's not an option. So what advice could you give to people like me, people who have little to no land, who can't get out there and plant trees. What advice can you give to us people that want to be better land stewards, but, you know, besides being aware of what we buy, what practical things could we do to really enhance that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the important thing to remember about that is every little bit of land matters, you know, especially when it comes to sort of American suburbia. Basically, all of these suburban lots exist because there used to be a farm field or a forest tract or a wetland or something, and they, you know, a sort of a large contiguous type of habitat that was sold and chopped up into little pieces, and now every little piece, you know, has a house and like a slightly different type of land use. And those big land use changes have really impacted our wildlife and our ecosystems. You know, there's been several studies talked about recently about, you know, bird populations, like migrating bird populations and bird habitats. And one study that stood out to me was looking at, you know, shrub and landscapes around houses and how they impact bird health. And you know, there have been multiple studies about this. But basically, even if you have a small lot, you know, you can actually grow plants, trees, and shrubs that are friendly to native wildlife. You know, you can encourage pollinator populations, pollinator insect populations with certain types of flowers. You know, you can grow shrubs, maybe more native type of shrubs that have fruits and nuts with nutritional properties that are good for our native birds. You know, you can grow a tree or two. And actually, even if you have a small lot, you know, having, if everybody in their small lots had a couple trees in their yard, well, then, you know, imagine kind of overall how much tree canopy or tree area there would be. And and again, those same types of benefits of water quality, air quality, wildlife habitat can actually exist in a suburban space, you know, if sort of all the neighbors are on board and people are actually growing trees and not cutting them down. I don't want to get too much on a soapbox, but, you know, the whole suburban lawn care that you see advertised on TV just really aggravates me, you know, how these companies, lawn care companies, make this presentation like we have to have, you know, 100% fescue or bluegrass, and we can't have any other types of things in our yard.
No,
you know, dandelions are the enemy.
yeah.
Basically what they're saying is make your lawn a desert, give it no life, just because it looks tidy. And I take big issue with that philosophy. I think it's a horrible mistake, and I think we're disconnecting even more from nature by treating this plant biodiversity as the enemy, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely encourage suburban landowners to plant trees, plant shrubs, plant flowers. Let those dandelions grow. I mean, what are they hurting, really? I don't get it. What's the problem with a dandelion? You know. So, and it's better overall for everybody if we have a more eco-friendly attitude to our landscaping, as opposed to trying to create some golf course-like environment just so our neighbor thinks we're tidy, I suppose. I don't know. But anyway, it's a harmful attitude, and I really hope that we as a society can move past that and think about what we're actually doing with our land and why. And I hope that people who are nut growers and nut enthusiasts and, like you said, kind of preaching to the choir, people who already understand these things can encourage their neighbors, you know, can help create an environment where people appreciate, you know, biodiversity, and don't just listen to the, you know, Scott's Turfcrest ads on TV.
But just a few things. Number one, if you know Amy in real life, buy her a beer and ask her about her hatred of mowing, because it's a wonderful story. You'll learn a lot and you'll be amused. Number two, this just makes me think about last month's podcast with Dr. Coyle, David Coyle, where he talks about his hatred of ornamental pears. So if you are, I should reiterate last month's message, and if you haven't listened to it, please do. It's one of my favorite podcast episodes I've ever recorded. if you are planting species, try to stick with something native, so you're not planting something invasive. You're not encouraging this invasive. It's like I can feel a shudder go through the invasive scientists.
Well, and along those lines, there are lots of wonderful resources online that are easy to find about what are good native plants for your landscape, mm-hmm. and where to get them. So it's no secret, it's no mystery. There's plenty of resources out there. So, you know, a quick Google search will help you decide what are the most beneficial plants to put in your lawn versus things like pears, you know, those celery pears that mm-hmm. that do sort of become weedy, especially in suburban environments.
Absolutely. You know, and we talked about this last month as well. Like, technology can be a wonderful thing. One of the things you can do is pop on Twitter and tweet at your favorite. Huge boom on scientists on Twitter, and they love talking about their interests. So if you tweet at them and ask, like, hey, I'm interested in planting this in my yard, chances are they'll respond to you because they're really excited to talk about it. So, you know,
I can't verify.
Talk to your extension agents, you know, get online, join a community, and pass a message along that bit by bit, if we all care and we all do something to be responsible landowners, you know, even someone like me who lives in suburbia, we can really make a big impact on our environment. And, you know, I understand we're not a multi-billion dollar company who is cutting down the rainforest to have more cattle grazing, but I think every little bit helps.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll reiterate that point. I think, you know, it's easy to kind of feel a defeatist attitude. You're like, well, mm-hmm. you know, sure, I can plant some hazelnuts in my front yard, but who cares, because rainforest is being cut down.
Right.
I mean, those things aren't, you know, those things are independent of each other. I mean, of course, it's unfortunate when large tracts of rainforest are being cut down, but still, you planting hazelnuts in your yard, you know, and your neighbors getting together and planting, you know, being friendly to pollinator plants, those things can make a difference. And the more people who are on board with that, the bigger difference we're going to make. So I would encourage people, you know, who are concerned about these big global environmental issues to don't forget that what you do, even on a small scale, can have an impact. So don't be discouraged, you know, plant seeds, plant trees, be outside. It will help.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I like to do, and I actually just saw this in our local neighborhood paper, is kind of like these hunts or like bingo. So, you know, research what flora and fauna you have in your region and think about what can I plant to see them. And it's kind of like a treasure hunt. You know, think about, oh, I'm going to plant these sunflowers so in the fall I get to see these seed-eating birds that maybe I don't see normally. So, you know, I think you have to consider what motivates you as a person and use it to your advantage on when you're considering how you can impact the environment. I honestly think it's easy as that. Like, if you are really interested in saving the honeybees, well, think about what pollinating plants you can plant in your yard. If you really like those bright colored birds, or you are really interested in looking at the different diverse of species of birds, consider what you can plant, or consider what you already have and how that impacts your environment. So, yeah. This just mm-hmm. like makes I go out and like talk to all my neighbors and be like, hey, you should totally plant hazelnuts, but that's probably the last thing you should do right now, so don't go knocking your neighbor's door.
Yeah, maybe just text your neighbors and tell them that instead. And, you know, of course, the most powerful thing we can do anytime, you know, quarantine or no quarantine, any time of year is be an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
You might be the eccentric person who has the lawn full of shrubs and flowers and no grass, and your neighbors might kind of turn up their noses and think you're a crazy person, but guess what? They're looking at that. They're talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Your example is impacting people, even if they don't all immediately go out and do the same thing. You know,
exactly.
Those neighbors who might be turning up their noses at your flower-filled lawn might have kids who think, wow, that's really beautiful. That's really cool. And in their mind, now in those kids' minds, that's something that's an option. You know, mm-hmm. whereas if they only see manicured lawns, they don't understand that there are other options other than manicured lawns, you know.
So
the best thing you can do is be an example, you know, regardless of the circumstances that you're in.
Absolutely. You know, and if you are quarantined, if you're listening to this and you are not a landowner, for example, I'm in Cleveland and we have so many wonderful parks that aren't closed. You can still go out and practice social distancing and go out and see how many bird species you can find in a day. Go out and see, you know, what tree species you can identify. These are all things that you can do without having to get your hands dirty, literally just walking in a park. And so it's just, again, it's cultivating awareness. And I think that's just such an incredible, important message to get out there. And, you know, I hope none of this is new for any of your listeners, but I hope that you can hear the passion in our voices when we do talk about it. And yeah, that's, I think, all the rants that I have in me today. Although I think, Amy, you should start a podcast called The Death of the Manicured Lawn. And then every week or so, have on another guest to talk about why it's horrific to have a manicured
lawn. Yeah, well, you know, I really do like to try to be, you know, think about things carefully and be measured and balanced when I talk about these things. And, you know, I appreciate that not everyone's tastes are the same as mine. So I'm afraid if I made a podcast like that, I might get a bit too carried away. I'd be a little less diplomatic than I would like to be.
This is very true. This is very true. And I'm just thinking of all the hate mail you'd get from, like, just people who love their lawns. And I don't know why it pisses me so much. Yeah. All right, Amy, do you have any? Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you have any last comments for this podcast recording?
I think I'll reiterate what you said. Just I would encourage people to go outside. You know, quarantine or no quarantine, you can spend some time outdoors. You can spend some time in the fresh air. It's very therapeutic. You can, you know, look around you, become familiar with the nature that is in your environment. Even if you're in a city, even you know, no matter where you are, there is some nature in your environment. I guarantee it. if you can get outside, you can look at birds, you can look at flowers, you can look at trees. You know, it's spring, the flowers are beginning, crocuses, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So I really would encourage people to just spend some time outdoors, even if you don't go very far from home, even if you're practicing social distancing, go outside, get some fresh air. I guarantee it will help make your life in general and your quarantine period much better.
Absolutely. And here at Go Nuts and the NJA, we really hope that you're staying safe and that you're staying healthy. And we understand that this can be a scary time and this can really raise our anxiety, but know that we're all in this together and we're all doing what we can to move this along. And anecdotally, one of the interesting things is we've been talking about maybe canceling our conference that's happening in August. And Greg Miller actually reminded me that in 1918, the NNGA canceled their annual conference due to the Spanish flu. So again, this shows that, you know, this might seem scary, but this has happened before and we can get through it.